you can send it right to Richard? Okay, so I'll show you guys that. Okay. Okay, today's April 26th, and we are taping the 8th of our discussion on the Aseret HaDibros, which means we're up to Motig Nov. I have some sources for you, and we're going to analyze the word and the etymology of the word in a few different sources here. Okay. And see how the word is used in the Tanakh. I mean, how much can you say about not stealing? We know what stealing is, right? Okay. However, I would first like to start by analyzing the etymology and its close proximity to the word tigzol, lo tigzol. What's the difference between lo tignov and lo tigzol? Gimel zayin lamed and gimel nun bet. Okay, the texts we will be using are really right in front of us, the sources I'm giving you. And to just start with, Gimel Zayin Lamed usually involves taking something with violence, snatching something, grabbing something. Yes, a gozal is a baby bird because it's usually snatched from the mother,
so
from
that's
the
nest.
Even in full view, it's then not ashamed of doing this in front of others. And Gimel Nun Bet is where you steal behind the closed door surreptitiously. This is why the Gemara in Maseches Bava Kama, which I think I have in these pages, says that the ganav is treated more harshly than the gazlan. So the ganav is afraid of man, afraid of being caught, but he's obviously not afraid of God. If he were afraid of God, he wouldn't be stealing. The gazlan is afraid of no one. So the ganav puts man on a higher pedestal than God. The gazlan doesn't. So the ganav pays kefil, he pays double. The ganav steals 100, he's caught, he has to pay 200. The gazlan is caught, he just pays back what he stole. Now he also has to bring, if he swore falsely to have stolen it, he has to bring what's called an usham gzelos, and he has to pay a fine of 1/5 of what he stole, but not double. Right? So the Gemara's explanation of why the ganav is treated more harshly is in terms of the trespass of the individual who trespassed. However, there are some of Farshim, amongst them Shimshon Frol Hirsch, who says that the function of the punishment is not only a function of what the person did wrong, but his trespass to society. You see, while the gazlan may accost you violently, he puts a knife in front of you and says, give me your wallet. But when he's finished, you know what happened. You know you have to cancel your cards. You know you have to deal with it, right? And you know what the guy looked like, and you may be able to actually accost him and catch him. But the ganav harms you even more. Because when you can't find your wallet, you're not sure if the reason why you can't find it is because it's behind the couch, or you dropped it in the park, or anything of that sort. That's why it's so wonderful to live in a society where people return things, because you say, okay, maybe someone found it, but they'll return it to me. If it fell in the lake, then I'm lost. But hopefully we live in a place where if someone did find this, they'll return it. So you don't know any of those things, and that debilitating lack of knowledge makes things worse for you, so you have to pay, the person who does it has to pay more than the Stam Gazlan, right? Okay, when someone picks your pocket from behind, right, once someone took your pocketbook, remember? So you knew that it's not, I just didn't just drop it in the wastebasket. I know someone took it from my carriage. Right. So those are two different interpretations. The two different types of punishments are a function of the severity of the sin, or the severity of the trespass to the sinner. Okay, the same two opinions appear of why one has to pay a 4 or 5-fold punishment for stealing cattle or sown. Right, either because of the severity of what the person did, person who stole the sheep has to have the embarrassment of carrying it over his hand, his shoulder, remember that in the Gemara? Or the severity of what, of not from his standpoint, but the severity of what he's taking away from the other person. Right? The person is standing to lose a lot more from the ox because he does more for you than what a sheep does for you. The sheep you lose fourfold, the ox you lose even more. Because it, right? Everyone see what I just did?
I don't think today the secular law will go along with that.
No, okay, but by the way, I'm not saying a Torah law goes along with both. Some of Farshim, I'm just saying, some of Farshim explain the Ganav is worse than the Gazlan because of, irrespective of what the sufferer suffers, it's what he did. Another interpretation said it's from the standpoint of the person who was trespassed against whom the trespass was made. Okay, so that's to start with. All right, so, but since...
So it seems that a Ganav can steal a thing or a thought.
Exactly. The Shorash Gimel Zayin Lamed. I can have you leaf through the Tanakh now, but let me just do it. Maybe we'll have time at the end. Gimel Zayin Lamed is used to snatch things that you wouldn't call it stealing. For instance, at the end of Shmuel Bet, when Avishai grabs a spear from one of Goliath's brothers who's about to kill David, right? Remember the very famously, it says, Vayigzol et chanito. You wouldn't say he stole. They're in battle, they're killing each other. You wouldn't say he stole his spear, right? He snatched it. You get it? But you certainly would never say Vayignov, because that really means to steal. You would never say Vayignov et chanito. You following? So it says he David was there. Excuse me, I'm not going to mean to use a particular person. And the spear was right there. And he snatched it right out of his hand. So he went like this, and there was nothing in his hand. Right? So that's how Avishai saved his life. So that's the Lashon, Vayigzol. You would never use Vayignov in such a thing. But there's even a better example. By the way, this is just opening a concordance and looking it up. But remember at the end of Sefer Shoftim, when the tribe of Binyamin was almost wiped out? Mm-hmm. Right? You learned that recently?
Yeah.
So they remember that also the men of Israel said, we won't give our daughters over to Binyamin. So they regretted that. We're stuck. There's no way out. They're going to die out in this generation. There's no next generation. What are they going to do? So they went to a city called Yavesh Gila. Did the whole story leading up to the story with Shaul later. But okay, they went to Yavesh Gila. They took 400 women. They gave them white garments. And they had told them, dance out in the fields. And it says, this is the verb that's used. It says, now go, men of Binyamin, go out to the field and... gazel a woman, each one. Not gazel, but gazel, meaning gozel. Each one, snatch, you know, ostensibly the women should have some say in this matter, I guess. But it says, it uses the word gozal for, now, they're not being stolen, ostensibly, but they are being snatched, right? So that's good. I'll give two examples. There are other examples. This should be enough.
Were they converted, though?
That's you're asking a complicated question, because some of Farshim say that these 400 women for Yavesh Gilad were not Jews.
Then they died out anyway because the kids aren't Jewish.
Well, or that they converted, to Judaism. All 400. I prefer that derech. In my curriculum, they wrote for Shoftim. I say the teachers should teach that derech, because to say that the people of Yavesh Gilad were originally Jews. I'm not going to get into now why I don't like to say that, but if you read the last two chapters of Shoftim, you would certainly come to the same conclusion. And I don't want to teach my fifth graders that what happened in that story was involved a Jewish city. It's just, the whole story is crazy.
But Rabbi, it ends by saying,
it's trying to tell us how crazy things can get when there's no good moral leadership.
It's the same principle that the 10 lost tribes aren't really lost, because some of those people were in visiting their friends in the southern kingdom, so their
Fair
descendants
enough.
Are coming from the
Fair
middle.
Enough, yes, yes. We do, we just, they're not identified. That's the problem.
Mashiach comes.
Yes, 100%. Yes, we do feel that there's some mitzvahs that require all the tribes to be identified, like Yovel. So yes, 100%. Okay, so again, I just gave you two examples where Gimel, Zion, Lamed is used to where I wouldn't use Gimel, Nun, Bet. But the Rebbetzin is 100% right, is that some of the places where Gimel, Nun, Bet is used, right, is where you would never use Gimel, Zion, Lamed, and because to steal something, right, to steal something is lav dafka, so something doesn't necessarily have to be a... Right, of something physical, material. So the most common example of this, which is used a few times in Tanakh, is
Gnevas
Das. Although that terminology is a Chazal terminology, but fair enough. Chazal would never say Gzeilas Das. He would never use. But so Nos Dvarim is a type of Gneva. It's not a type of Gzeila. No, but I'm asking for the following. Yes, but you're stealing a thing. You're stealing. Right, you would never use gazela for kidnapping, right? Even though you might be snatching a baby from its crib, but yes, lo tignov. The Gemara says we're going to get into all this, and so when we start to look at these pages, lo tignov includes kidnapping. Lo tigzol does not. No, I'm asking you to consider the following, and you'll get it as soon as I impart properly what I mean to say, is that there's something that's stolen in Tanakh often. It's used about four or five times in the whole Tanakh. And it's not a thing that can certainly be taken and put into your pocket. It is a thing. It does exist. It's a material. It's physical. But if someone would steal it, that person would not be in a position to be what the pasuk is talking about.
Maybe like with the basura when somebody,
rapes them. And then Tanakh doesn't use that word. Yes, the heart. Oh, who said that? Yeah. The heart. Yes. Hearts are stolen a few times in Tanakh. Right? Yes. You can say you take my heart, away, but there is a pasuk like that. Yayin. No. Yayin tirosh v'yitzhar yikach lev. Anyone want to guess where that pasuk is? Everyone's going to guess Mishlei. It's not. It's Hosea. It's a pasuk in Hosea. I know. I, that's why I told you, because it sounds like Mishlei, right? Right, so yikach lev means it takes your heart. You wouldn't say that wine steals a person's heart. You say wine takes a person's heart, right? But there are some people in Tanakh. Who's the famous heart stealer in Tanakh?
David.
Close, very close. Who stole the heart of Israel and his punishment was Midik? It's a Mishnah. It's a Mishnah in Maseches Sota. He got what he deserved because... when he was killed, someone threw darts into his heart. That's what it says. Avshalom. Avshalom is hanging from the tree by his hair. And it says that Yoav took three darts and threw them right into his heart and killed him. What a strange way to kill someone. The Gemara says, yeah, that's how people die in the Bible. Mida keneged mida. It says he stole the hearts of Bnei Yisrael by Yignov et Levav Ha'am. By doing what? Because when his father would do court cases and people left court not happy with the decision, he would say, tell me, what happened in there? He goes, this, and he told him the case. He goes, oh, that's because my father is in charge of the court system. If I was in charge of the court system, let me tell you what, you wouldn't have gotten out. And he did that to hundreds of people. What a schlub. I like to use that word. I don't know, it fits for everybody. So.
That's Midrash, right?
No, that's a pasuk. That's a pasuk in Shmuel Bet. Yes, that he went to people and he told them after court cases. Sounds like a medrash, but it's a pasuk. And how he was killed is also a pasuk. It's all in Shmuel Bet. Yeah. Sometimes it's hard to differentiate between a medrash and a story, but no, that's all in the Bible. Okay, so it says by Yignov, as he stole the heart. So I said to Otav, giving him a hint, if you actually physically stole the heart, the person would be worse than just convinced to be favoring someone they shouldn't be favoring. It'd be a lot worse than that. But that's an interesting thing, because Gimel Nun Bet, this is what Robinson was saying before, can be more symbolic of taking something without actually... Gimel Zion Lamed is only used when you actually grab something and take something from it. So you wouldn't say vayigzol eslavav b'nei Yisrael. But you can say vayignov, as Camilla said, you can say vayignov eslavav b'nei Yisrael. And then that also, if I may, you know, since this class is more on linguistics than on topics, what's very interesting is that the Bible certainly uses idiomatic phrases, which is what's happening here. You stole a heart means that, and you stole my, like later Chazal would use, vayignoves gnevis das, which is to create a false impression, to create a false sense of indebtedness. When the Gemara gives examples of gnevis das, it says that when you make someone feel that they owe you more than they actually do, you know, we actually have to express to the person, no, you're making a wrong impression about what you owe me. I didn't really, you know, open a new wine barrel for you. I have 95% of it is on consignment to sell tomorrow, so you shouldn't feel that I opened up a whole new wine barrel for you, you know, stuff like that. Yes?
I said I'm going to specifics, but specifically, if let's say you live in a place where everybody's engaging in the neighbor's task, and let's say you get put at a disadvantage for not doing the same, are you allowed to do the same to equalize yourself?
This is a complicated question. There is a pasuk in Tehillim that says in Navor Titabar, when everyone else is acting with subterfuge, you can outsmart them. There's also a Gemara about like this with Yaakov trying to outsmart Lavan, and she says, Yaakov, it sounds to me like you're engaging in subterfuge. Is a tzaddik allowed to engage in subterfuge? Of course, that's the conversation the rabbis are having for them, but. But he says, of course, it's a chayav. The tzaddik has to try to outsmart someone who he knows is trying to trick him. So let's come up with our signs of how I'll know that it's you under the chuppah. I mean, he got outsmarted anyway. But okay. But anyway, the important thing is that it could be based on these sources. But let me get back to what I was just saying, is that the Tanakh uses idiomatic phrases. And I think that Rashi was so sensitive to this issue that he chooses to give his, those, if you're some expert students of Rashi here, Rashi did not write an introduction to his Perush. Right? Writing introductions was more of a Sephardic thing. Ibn Ezra has a long introduction, Ramban has a long introduction, everyone in the Mikros Gedol, Sforno has an introduction, Or Chaim has an introduction, everybody, Rashbam has an introduction, he writes in the beginning of Bereishis. Only Rashi just gets right to business, and he says, what do I have to tell you what my agenda is? You'll see it as soon as you read me. Right? But everybody else has to tell you, what's my purpose in writing this commentary? Right? You'd think the first one who would write one would explain, what's my job here? So, according to scholars of Rashi, Rashi's introduction, per se, is a short little comment where he writes, Yesh Midrashei Agadah Kvar Sidrum Rabotenu Al Nechonam B'Breishit Rabah Va'ani Lo Bati Lepshuto Shel Mikra Ula Agadah HaMiyashevet Divrei Mikra Davor Dabur Alofnav. I have only come to give you Pshat, the skin level. Lafshit means to skin an animal, so I'll give you the skin level meaning. But if I think that the text needs settling, so Agadah HaMiyashevet, it is a Mikra Shetzarech Yishuv, I will incorporate Agadah, I'll incorporate a drash in order to explain an unsettled text until what I write is a Devor Debur Lofnav, which is a Pasuk in Mishlei. Means a word fitly spoken. You may disagree with my conclusion and what I do with the pasuk, but you can't argue that it's not the meaning of what's written in front of me. I think the Torah speaks very flowery language, and it's extraneous, and it has a bereishis in itself, should be barishonabar elokim, so I'm going to incorporate lots of drash. All right, and I'm the first one to do it, so cut me some slack if you think I'm too much drash, my grandson, Rashbam. So what's the pasuk where Rashi writes this? Do you remember? What does he say? There are lots of midrashim about this pasuk, but he doesn't even explain the pasuk. He just says, go look in Medrash Rabbah if you want to know what this pasuk is. And I'll tell it to you, and it's why I'm saying this. The pasuk is where Adam and Chava are recognizing that they did something wrong. They realize they're unclothed. And they hear something hovering above the garden. Right? So this is the pasuk. Vayishma'u et kol Hashem mitalech b'toch hagan. They heard the voice of God. Now, the next word is the word that the Rashi is commenting on. Because what's the word? Mitalech betoch hagan. What's the problem?
How can you hear the voice of God walking around in the garden?
Right. Hey, lamed chaf is a word used in the Bible for what feet do. And since a voice has no feet, Rashi's problem is, and I know you can say, come on, it's idiomatic. Yes, that's what Ibn Ezra writes, and that's certainly in the pshat correct. But this is how Rashi works. It's sort of like Occam's razor in philosophical thought, which means always use your simplest and best terminology. The pasuk should have been a word the Torah had already used. Vayishmu et kol Hashem merachefet apnei hagan. That could be fine. Voices can reishchet pay, but voices don't hey lamed chaf. Right? I would even use a better word. I would have preferred vayishmu et kol Hashem overet bagan. Overet betoch hagan. Voices can pass over. That's fine. And then you could probably have two or three better words. Why mitalech b'toch hagan? Now, Ibn Ezra shows but that's used that way. Hey, lamed chaf is used this way elsewhere in the Tanakh. So that's fine. But it's still, you see, Rashi doesn't like to explain the pasuk here because three or four other places in Tanakh it's used that way. Rashi looks up in his simple dictionary in his head. He knows, hey, lamed chaf needs feet. Voices don't have feet. I need drash. Okay? Now, Rashi knows any pasuk Ibn Ezra can cite. Rashi knows that there are pasukim like, listen to this one, Hamoves v'hachayim biyad halashon. Translate. Okay, so the tongue. The tongue doesn't have hands. So what do you mean life and death is in the hands of the... So come on, it's idiomatic for goodness sakes. That's how people talk. But don't you see that when the word is there, if I were Rashi, I would say, you know how damaging Lashon Hara is? It's like two hands that come out of the mouth, out of the tongue, I guess. The word is tongue. And it strangles the person who's talking about. It has hands. It can take a knife and it can stab someone. That's how powerful the tongue is. It has hands. You get it? Yad HaLashon is a pasuk in Tanakh. It says the tongue has hands. Right? You get it? So that's you have to have an imagination for that. But Ibn Ezra does this kind of thing. He shows this is how the Bible talks. This is but voices don't have feet and tongues don't have hands. But this is how the idioms work. Right? Yes.
It all sums up that it's actually Chameshet HaChushim that are functioning in all our Ten Commandments. It's
wow.
The eyes, it's the ears, it's the nose.
I like this, yeah. Because there are five pairs. Let's try to figure that out. I like this. This could be. Yeah.
It just struck me because of, listen.
Right, we'll figure that out. I'm going to write that down. You know, once you say to do it, we'll find the ingenuity to fit it. You know, right? You know what I'm saying? it could be putty in our hands to just design the way we like and just be as convincing as we need to be.
As you said, it's linguistics and it's
okay. I like it. Yes. Okay. Lotignov would certainly be the hands, and there's some debros about speech. You know. So okay, but we'll try to work on that before the 10th. Okay.
Right.
We're up to 8 now. We're going backwards though. We're doing 8, 7, and 6. So 6 will be the last one. All right. So this, but you see, Rashi certainly knew idioms. He knew idiomatic phrases. There's no doubt. But when Rashi approached, let's say, a text like this, it'd be an exercise. When Rashi approaches this text, it says Avraham and Sarah, apparently, Avraham and Sarah both said, we're brother and sister. So a monarch, you know, I'm doing her a favor. I'm making her a princess, perhaps. I'll give her a nice lots of gifts as they continue. Or maybe she'll want to stay here and live with me. And her brother will go on his way and find his own wife. Right? But then when they get into the room, in the Yechidus, the Pasuk says, before he did anything, Vayinaga Hashem et Paro al Dvar Sarai Eishes Avram. Right? So the Kliyokar asks, why do you have to tell me Altbar Sarah Eishes Avram? Okay, the text wants to assure that the reader understands that she's really a Be'ulas Baal, she's really married, right? All right, but the reader does know that already. The reader knows that. She's called Avram's wife in Parshas Noach already. Mm-hmm. He says, you're my wife, but we'll stay, you're my sister. This is what we do when we travel. Come on, what does the reader have to say Ishas Avram again? And what's this Al-Dvar Sora Ishas Avram? And itself, you know, is why do you, you know, it's an unusual word to say for that. It's much better.
Because they spoke to him.
So that's the clear course says. It's an elaboration of Rashi. It starts with Rashi. It's definitely, it's in Bereishis Rabbah. Is that Paro made his move on her. I mean, she's entitled. He took her in. She didn't object when I took her in. Apparently, Avram and Sarah both expected this outcome because they knew that God is looking after them. I mean, Avram, Ramban just says that. Avram, you put your wife in danger. Come on. Stand up for her. What did you think is going to... Because I know Melumedim Ben Nissim. You know, these are the kind of, we're used to these kind of things happening for us. What were you thinking a monarch is going to do with this woman behind the closed door? He made his move on her. And then she said, Paro, now I have to tell you, I'm a married woman. Mm-hmm. Married? You said you're not? He goes, who's your husband? He goes, the guy who was out there. He goes, he said you're your sister, and you said too. You said your brother and sister. Right? So she, right, he Avram himself started to explain. After that was that second one's with Avimelech in Parshas Vayera, where he says, well, you know, she's my but you know what? There's some chachma to that, because Chazal say that Sarah was Yiska. It's not a dream. Yiska means princess in Aramaic. Sarai means princess in Hebrew. So if Yiska is Sarai, who's Yiska's father in the Chumash? Haran. Haran.
Yeah.
Right? That means that Lot and Sarah, brother and sister. I'll get back to that in a second. If Lot and Sarah, brother and sister, Avram calls Lot his brother in Perek Gimel. You call your nephew your brother, you can call your niece your sister. Right? Fair enough. Okay? But Paro makes his move. I'll get back to Lot and Sarah in a minute. Paro makes his move on Sarah, and Sarah says, Paro, I'm a married woman. Advar Sarashis Avram. So Paro says, I don't believe you. He says, Paro, you're doing the wrong thing now. I'm not allowing you to do this. So he says, I'm sorry, you're behind the closed door of a king. Try to scream. No one's going to do anything. Right? So she said, God, do something. Right? He did. Paro got up with some kind of a shock. And he said, what did you do to me? He goes, God, hit him again. Right? That's what Rashi says, what she did. That's how Paro didn't touch her. Right? This is Sari Menu before Yitzchak is born. I mean, come on. Right? This is our matriarch. Okay? So how does Rashi know that Sarah did this?
Can you rely on this Aldavar?
Because it says, Aldavar Sarai Eishas Avram. You get it? They always knew that by her word, this wouldn't happen. How does Rashi say that? Because Aldvar, what should the word have been? Vayinaga Hashem es Paro, Biglal, Ba'avur, Bishvil, Odot. I have four easy Hebrew words, and you could probably come up with three or four more biblical Hebrew words that would have done better than the idiomatic Aldvar. I know Aldvar means he smote Paro on the matter of Sarah. That's the best English translation to give, on the matter of Sarah. In other words, explain it idiomatically, but use what the words mean. Al-Dabar, on the matter of... But that's not the more common way. Rashi likes the most common way of saying things in the Bible. Don't give me unusual way of saying things. I'll darshan them if you do. Ibn Ezra and my grandson Rashbam may not like it, but I'm going to darshan those things. You with me throughout all this? Okay? So gonav is easier to use idiomatically than gozal. Because gazal is much more specific. You can't gazal a heart, but you can gonav a heart. Right? It's a simple etymology.
Eyes. The eyes play here.
Okay, good. Okay, so we'll have to work through all this. All right, so I guess this is enough. Let me just close off with what I said about Lot and Sarai. I know this is a deep tangent already, but I told you that today would be more linguistic than anything. When Lot leaves Egypt, it says Lot was wealthy also. So Rashi writes, it doesn't say that Paro gave Lot anything. It says Paro gave Abraham. So maybe Avram shared with him, but this is, Rashi writes, no. Lot deserved wealth because he did not inform Paro that Avram and Sarah were lying when they said with their brother and sister. And I look at Rashi and I said, I once said this drash upstairs on a Friday night. On the Friday night of the Rodney King
trial,
where the police were declared innocent, the police officers were declared innocent, there was rioting going on in Los Angeles. And remember, we were having YU students over. We had about 20 YU students over coming down from Washington Heights to stay by us. And our mayor at the time, Mayor Dinkins, prided himself that there was no rioting in New York. So my friends who came, my students who came from Washington Heights begged to say otherwise. He'd say the cars were on fire all over Washington Heights. So he said, they said, anyway, they came, they said they're here, and I'm speaking Friday night. And I said that you don't give a yeshikoach for human beings for not behaving like a behemoth. Mm. Right? Right? There are ways to protest. There are laws in America that give you rights to protest. But you don't give human beings, and many were behaving like behemoths. But he glossed over that. But we were certainly spared the type of rioting you saw in Los Angeles. But so this is what I said. This was, it was Parshas Lech Lecha. Go look back at the record. The court's decision came out on Parshas Lech Lecha that year, and I said, so I asked the same question: why is Rashi praising Lot for not behaving in a way which would have been despicable if he stood forth and said to Paro, "Hey, that's not a brother. That's not brother and sister. That's a married couple there." Right? Why is Rashi giving Lot credit for not doing something that would have been despicable? So I just gave you the answer. Avram is getting all this great wealth. He says, "V'tnuli matanos." Avram leaves Egypt loaded because he's the brother of such a wonderful, beautiful woman. Right? Go ahead, talk to me. Lot is the brother. Why he's getting all this wealth? For claiming he's the brother. I am the brother. He did have a possible reason to step forth. You following? That would have gotten Avram probably in very big trouble. But okay, but Lot is Sarah's brother, according to this whole Mahalach, according to Chazal. Okay, just putting it out there. All right, so let's look at the first page. The first page of the number one is on it. You see it there? Okay. I'm just saying is that's it's an idiomatic phrase. The reason why Rashi wants the darshan is because I don't like idiomatic phrases unless it's the common way of saying the thing. I go with Occam's razor. Use their simplest word. Don't use a complicated word. Voices don't have feet. Halach. Now, you can also show that halach, tongues have hands, voices have feet, is a common thing the Bible does, but it's not that Rashi's going to darshan when that happens. Right. So the Torah says on page 1, Lo tirtzach, lo tin'af, lo tignov. Lo tiktol nefosh, don't kill a human being. Right? Lo tin'af, the onkelos, I'm reading onkelos, right, I'm sorry. Lo tinuf, which means don't commit adultery. Right? And lo tignov is just lo tignuf. Okay, I said that because you see, Rashi says that lo tignov, our mitzvah, right? Lo tignov is, you see the last word on page 214, lo tignov. Rashi writes, begonev nefashot hakatuv medaber. Lo tignovu, next week's parasha, begonev mamon. Right? So lo tignov in aseret hadibrot is kidnapping. Lo tignovu in... there it's in plural, but because everything here is in singular, so it's a, but it, that's talking about stealing money. So then Rashi says, "O eino ela ze begonev mamon." Maybe our mitzvah in the Decalogue is also about stealing stam money. Ula halan begonev nefashos. Maybe in Kedoshim it's talking about that. So Amras de davar halamed me inyano. I will tell you otherwise from a terminology. Remember, it's one of the 13 hermeneutical principles of drash. Things like to stay in their own neighborhood. Right? The two commandments just before this are capital crimes, murder and adultery. So too is this. So lo tignov couldn't just be don't steal someone's watch, because that's not a capital crime. It's don't steal a human being, don't commit kidnapping. Then all three of these, number 6, number 7, and number 8, are all capital punishments. When lo tignovu appears in Parshas Kedoshim, it's don't contradict, don't hold on to a pikadon, don't hold on to someone lent you, don't claim that it was lost, and don't steal. So there, it's talking about monetary issues, so lo tignovu, so it's called davar hamalamed miinyano. Just parenthetically, is that in a book written comparing Jewish law, biblical law, to ancient law called cuneiform law, there are some that compare like to 3 or 4 laws, but there's some that compare to the corpus of all ancient law, 100 codes. Anyway, these authors claim that they could not find one ancient civilization or society, any ancient system, that has the death penalty for kidnapping like the Torah. Not one ancient code has the death penalty for kidnapping. No, there's one other, because there's a broad array of punishments for different things. Most ancient civilizations have the death penalty for stealing objects, but not murder. Crazy. You can buy yourself off murder. It's much harder to buy yourself off stealing. But the other one is no ancient code has the draconian punishment of death for beating parents. Torah has the punishment of beating parents is death. If you draw blood, with intent to do so, to harm. Right? So there's no ancient code. Those two, and they're one right next to the other in the Torah. Anyway, so here the Torah. So Rashi is telling us that Lo Tignov is on, and it's a medrash. You look, I put some lines on top of it. It's a Gemara in the Masechet Sanhedrin. Lo tignov, he said, he quotes the Rashi, just quotes the Gemara. B'gonev nefashot ha-katuv medaber, aval b'gnevat mamon, harei hu omer, lo tignovu. Okay. Okay. So we know, now, how do we know from here that we're talking about something that's high of the death penalty? Doesn't say anything about the death penalty here. Right? Okay, so you know, we'll learn from other places that all three of these, lo tirzach, murder, adultery, and kidnapping, are listed elsewhere in the Torah as incurring the death penalty. Right? That's what the Torah Tzmimah says at the bottom. If you turn the page where it says lo tignovu, see, I've circled Rashi. It says, azhara legonev Mamon, avalotignov shebeaserata dibrot, azhara the gonev nefashot. Devar halameid min yano, devar shechayavin alav mitat beit din. We just did that, same Rashi, same point. Okay? Okay? And that's what it says here. It just quotes the same Gemara in Sanhedrin. So I'm going to tell you this Torah Tzmima that I have on the outside. He just goes through some of the laws of Gneva. Is that if you steal something and you voluntarily give it back, you don't pay the double portion. You don't pay anything. You just give it back. There's always that what do you call it? The word escapes me right now. Usually with taxes, what do they call it? No. If you owe taxes and you agree, you admit that you give it up, they won't send you to jail. You haven't given your taxes in 5 years.
No, it's a different word.
You know what I'm talking about. All right. Anyway, so
immunity.
Okay, but here there are some midrashim that seem to contradict this. You ever hear of a midrash that asks, why do we pierce the ear of the Eved Ivri wants to work on. It says, because Ozen Sheshoma Lo Tigno V'Kanav Nirtza. The ear that heard at Har Sinai, don't steal, and you went and stole. Now, that's obviously talking about stealing Mammon. So even within Chazal, it's not so clear. I would just say, Lo Tignov is a general violation of stealing, including people, including kidnapping. I mean, I don't think it's a necessary contradiction. But here is the rub. There's a Gemara in Maseches Brachos. I don't think I put it here. No, I did not. Gemara in Maseches Brachos that talks about the custom of saying Aseres HaDibros in the davening each day. Do you hear of this custom? Some Siddurim have it. And the Gemara says, no, we don't. It's not wise to say Aseres HaDibros every day. Mipnei tarumas haminim. Because of the claims of the heretics. Don't say Aseres HaDibros. What heretical claim should make me stop saying Aseres HaDibros? Yes?
There are not 613 mitzvot.
Correct. They said there's not 613 mitzvot. All that God revealed at Har Sinai was 10 mitzvot, and that's the extent of it. Who's likely to be the one they're referring to?
Christians.
Right? Ask them, why aren't you keeping Shabbos? Why aren't you keeping Gashrus? I keep the Ten Commandments. Well, Shabbos is one of them. If you're keeping Sunday, you're not keeping Aseres HaDibros. Right? It's Saturday, not Sunday. Is it raining again outside?
No, he's washing the...
Oh, good.
And the water is running like anything.
Oh, okay, good. All right, so because of Tarmus HaMinim, so we said, you know what, take Aseres HaDibros. Aseres HaDibros used to be part of the liturgy of the daily service in the Beis HaMikdash even. And they took it out because of... I mean, Christianity wasn't around so long when the Beis HaMikdash still stood. But be that as it may, they took it out because of Tarmus HaMinim. So there's Yerushalmi in Maseches Shkalim that comes up with an opinion, which, of course, in its fullness is not found anywhere in Chazal, but the first person to ever mention anything like this was Sadia Gaon, very famously. What am I talking about? What Sadia Gaon did? He's called his Azharos. Sadia Gaon showed how all of the 1613 commandments are hinted in the Aseres HaDibros. And he divided them. He divided all the commands of the Torah into 10 categories, not by senses, but by the mitzvahs. And of course, he says, Lo Tignov includes all types of stealing. And he shows Lo Tignov includes 47 other mitzvahs in the Torah. Right? If you don't give tithes, you're stealing. Mm-hmm. If you take your like a chicken payer, you're stealing. Right? Okay, a sota is violating Lo Tignov. You know, there are all the mitzvahs of the Torah can neatly fit within these 10. So the 10 represents the 613. So you can't beat them, so join them. Yes, the 10 commandments will say, but now that it's just 10, but it's the 10 represent the 613. So of course, Lo Tignov, O's in Shoshama, Lo Tignov, you know, if you stole a person, yeah, we'll kill you for that. We're not just going to bore your ear through. Right? Yes, yes. That's a Gemara at the end of Makos that says that about 7 or 8 different examples. And Yishayo, Tillim first brought down to 15, and Yishayo down to 10, and then 7, and 5, and 3, and Tzadik Bem Nasar Yichya. Okay, so now I just want to, you don't have to go through this, you can keep this, you look at it in yourself. But what I gave you on the following pages are 2 different books. And I have about 5, but I admit I could have given you much more than this. But I'm sure Jenny will like this. One is the brown driver in Briggs. On page 3, you can see Hebrew and English lexicon to the Tanakh. You have one in the house, I think I saw. You don't have one?
No.
BDB, it's very famous. It was written in 1905, and to this day, there's nothing that rivals a BDB. It'll be on page 3. Okay. So what I gave you, since Gonav is very close to Gozal in the words, but so you'll see they're close together in these dictionaries. And look what he does; he shows you the different ways that it's used. Right? He shows the various idioms. Okay, and he shows how the word is used. If you go to the other side, and what binyanim, how the word is used in other appearances in the ancient Near East. Imagine that; it's amazing. If Radak had known Akkadian and Ugaritic, you know, that would have revolutionized biblical grammar, right? These are languages that the Rishonim didn't know. Syriac and okay, they're using other Semitic languages that are very helpful in figuring out. You know, when Yaakov told Lavan, "Gnufsi yom, gnufsi laila," it wasn't that he actually stole from him, but he cheated him, right? All right, okay, and it made its way to a noun, a ganov. O is the noun of a verb, right? Kador, right? Makes kaderos, right? All right, but here is the reason why I circled the next one, which is gonaz. You see the next one right next to it? Gonav and gonaz. No, same page three. Gonav and gonaz is based on a theory of Rashi, which is that when two words share an essential two-letter, first two letters of the root, whatever you put after it is going to have a similar etymology. In this week's parsha, shosa means split hooves. Shosaf means to cut something. Right? The two letters of the Hebrew alphabet that can sustain the most other letters of the Hebrew alphabet afterwards are pei resh. Practically every word of the Hebrew alphabet that you put after a pei resh is another Hebrew word. About 80% of the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, all right, that are used even in Tanakh. All right, the only one for between aleph and yud is a bet. Only a bet, pei resh bet, is not a Hebrew word, but every other letter from aleph to yud is. Chof, lamed, mem, nun, samach, ayin, pei, sadik, kuf, resh, shin, tuf. Every letter of the Hebrew alphabet, but a bet, can go after pei resh in the Bible. Right? And every one of them means to separate or crumble into pieces or separate something. Right? So when Rashi spoke about a two-letter shoresh system, he wasn't, of course, pei resh kuf, the kuf is part of the shoresh. Of course it is. But that there is an essential linguistic connection of the first two letters that can take on, like, the third letter becomes like almost like a suffix. Ibn Ezra and Radak don't talk about this, but it's hard to deny. So gonaz is also to hide something, is what you do when you steal something, because you're hiding, you're stealing. Gozal is in the open. Gonav is quite hidden.
No, it's more of rob, right?
Yeah, I would use it that in English, yeah.
But even in English, right, you don't rob figures, you steal something.
How about this song, this line in the Beatles song? She could steal, but she could not rob. You know what song I'm talking about? What song are we talking about?
She came in through the bathroom.
Yes, she came in through the bathroom exactly. Window is the name of the song. She could steal, but she could not rob. Uh-huh. Just showing you little bakiyas here, that's all. But it's even more pronounced with the Gimel Zion. All right, so you can look at yourself, please. I gave you like five or six on the same page, page four. All right. Okay. And what Jenny will like is that I gave you Shimshon Fol Hirsch's dictionary on 5 and 6. It's an amazing dictionary with all the Shorashim where he does similar things. Only Shimshon Fol Hirsch is much more creative in the Hebrew language. I'm not saying he knew Syriac and Akkadian and Ugaritic like Brown, Driver, and Briggs did, but he had a command of the Hebrew language greater than they did. So what he does with Hebrew is just so amazing. Right? And you can see, I circled a lot of the same letter, the same words that BDB circled. I circled for Hirsch. I have some lexicons of other Semitic languages in my office that I could have really dazzled you with, but there's no need. But it's worthwhile for us, you know, even as simple students of the Bible, to spend an hour on one simple Hebrew word, lo tignov, and to really show how it does a lot of work outside of its own context. Okay, so that'll close our discussion. Lo Tignov. Next time will be Lo Tignov. Very fascinating Hebrew word. Yes, it sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Familiar?
Camellia, I have it. They were passing it down.
Yosef said that when he was taken to jail, he was no longer in the Eretz Yisrael.